The Lord be with you. A reading from the Holy Gospel according to Mark. Jesus said to his disciples, "In those days, after that tribulation, the sun will be darkened, the moon will not give its light, and the stars will be falling from the sky, and the powers in the heavens will be shaken. And then they will see the Son of Man coming in the clouds with great power and glory. And then he will send out the angels to gather his elect from the four winds and from the end of the earth to the end of the sky. Learn a lesson from the fig tree. When its branch becomes tender and sprouts leaves, you know that summer is near. In the same way, when you see these things happening, know that he is near, at the gates. Amen, I say to you, this generation will not pass away until all these things have taken place. Heaven and earth will pass away, but my words will not pass away. But of that day or hour, no one knows, neither the angels in heaven nor the Son, but only the Father." The Gospel of the Lord. Have you ever noticed that the seasons in our church calendar correspond to the seasons on our regular calendar? For example, Christmas. Take Christmas as an example. When Jesus, the light of the world, is born into the world, that's the very time in which the days begin to be filled with more light and they finally get longer and longer and longer. Or Easter, when all the world is a bloom and a blossom, that's the time in which we celebrate the new life of Christ risen from the dead. And then all these weeks that pass by one after another, like a weaver's shuttle, the time that we call ordinary time, it all comes to an end in this time. And have you noticed that every year at this time, the readings for Mass begin to speak of the last things: death and judgment, heaven and hell. It's done on purpose, you know. The message is that just as the year must inevitably draw to a close, don't forget, one day too, your life must draw to a close. We heard that in all of our readings today in somber, almost poetic language. First reading: "At that time there shall arise Michael the archangel, a time unsurpassed in distress. Those sleeping in the earth will awake, the just like the stars of the firmament, the wicked in everlasting horror and disgrace." Or the gospel that we just heard: "The sun will be darkened, and the moon will not shed its light, and the stars of the firmament will be shaken, and then you will see the Son of Man seated at the right hand of the power and riding on the clouds of heaven." Why do we hear this? Because it makes us wise. That's why we hear it. Do you know the difference between knowledge and wisdom? Knowledge holds on to the facts, holds on to the data. Wisdom is different. Wisdom knows not the facts, not the data. Wisdom knows the difference between what's important and what is not. Wisdom is able to tell the difference between what matters and what never did. And the very beginning of wisdom is to realize that your time here is limited, that you only have but so many tomorrows. Make us know the shortness of our life, Psalm number 90 says, that we might gain wisdom of heart. Now, today I'm going to ask you to think about a question, okay? I'm going to ask you to think about a question, because here in the gospel we heard Jesus say, when the end comes, nobody knows. Nobody knows the day, nobody knows the time or the hour. Not even the angels in heaven, not even the Son, but only the Father. The question that I ask you to think about today is this: what if you did know? What if we all knew? Great big writing in the sky, written on the clouds of the sky, and everybody knew, without a shadow of a doubt, that this great whole big ball of wax that we call the planet Earth was all going to come to a screeching halt next Tuesday afternoon at 1:30. Right? What would you do? What would you do? Probably as many different answers to that question as there are people seated here today, right? Some people would make a beeline for the confessional, make the darndest, most complete confession they ever could. They'd say, "Jesus, have mercy on me, a sinner, and remember me, Lord, when you come into your kingdom." Many others, I'm sure most of you here, would tell your family how much you love them and try to seek forgiveness for anybody you might have hurt. Still others would hop the first flight to Vegas, max out the credit card, head straight to the casino or to the bar or perhaps to the Dunkin' Donuts, right? Many different answers as there are people here in this church. But let me ask you to consider this. Whatever it is that you would do, it's not so terribly different from what you're already doing, because people tend to die exactly as they've lived. Right now, right where you are, every decision you make is hardening you to a point. People always say, you know, I'll change my life later. Always later and later, not realizing that every decision they make hardens their life as if to a point towards God or against God, making it less and less likely that they're going to change anything in the time that is to come. Back when I was teaching high school, I was the chaplain of O'Connell High School. I taught seniors and I taught sophomores. And I gave them a project once. I said, write an essay for religion class, imagining that a terrible asteroid was headed inevitably on its trajectory towards planet Earth, and we all had 30 days left. Write an essay telling me what would you do. You'd be amazed to discover how many students said that they wouldn't do anything different. Just keep on doing everything exactly as they'd already been doing it. And I went to some of these students and I said, you know, don't you maybe want to hedge your bets a little bit? Maybe get to confession, maybe say a prayer? And these students said, no. I said, why not? I said, because that would make me a hypocrite. I'm going to keep on doing exactly what I've done. And it's a fact of life. People tend not to make ideological 180-degree hairpin turns, or, you know, like religious stops and about faces. I've been a priest for 26, going on 27 years now. Only once in my life have I ever seen a deathbed conversion. Lady in the hospital, I got a call. She could go to the hospital. She's about 30-something years old, not too old. And she said, I'm not religious. I've never been to church. In fact, I've never been baptized. But I've always thought that there is a God, and I'm afraid of judgment. And can I get baptized? And I said, sure. Yeah, we can do that. Baptism, confirmation, First Communion, right there in the hospital. She died hours later. It's the only time I've ever seen it. Because most people keep on going in the direction that they're going. If they're devout, they tend to be devout right up until the end. And if they're not devout, can I share a couple more stories with you? Occasionally, and not without, and not infrequently, the priest will get a phone call from someone to visit their family member who doesn't go to church, who doesn't believe in God, any of these things. They beg and they plead the priest as if maybe hoping that by some kind of magic miracle, the presence of the priest is going to change this. So, you know, you go, right? And you go and you make the visit. And you knock on the door and you say, priest is here. And they say, what are you doing here? And I say, well, you know, your family, they asked me to visit. And this man says to me, go away, I'm busy. And it's true. He was busy. He was watching a movie. No time for Jesus Christ, but plenty of time for Al Pacino in Scarface. I came back later and I got him when he was asleep, anointing him sick. I hope it did something, right? And then I got another call. Would you please go visit, you know, my uncle or whoever it was? And I knock on the door. Priest is here. Family asked me if I'd come visit. Maybe you wanted to talk about a couple of things. And the man said, "You're a Catholic priest?" I said, "Yes." And in a voice that would send a chill down your spine, that echoed down throughout the hallways of the hospital, a voice that would make your blood curl, he said, "Get out! Get out!" Backed right up, and I walked away. And all I could think is, I wonder if somewhere back along this man's past, he told himself that he'd always have time to turn to God later. And we always say later and later and later, and later never comes. It's really fun. We all know what's right. And we all tell ourselves we're going to change. It's very much like diet and exercise, have you noticed? Long about this time of year, people say to themselves, "You know, I'm going to change the way I eat. I'll start after Thanksgiving. No, wait. No, after Christmas. Well, if I've made it as far as Christmas, I mean, I can at least wait through the new year, right? Oh, what the heck? I'll start after Lent." And it's always tomorrow and tomorrow and tomorrow. And I want to warn you, the wisdom that the church tries to present to us every year at this time is to remember that you only have but so many tomorrows. If I could leave you with only one bit of wisdom to think about, it would be this. Be reconciled. First of all, be reconciled to God. Most people don't go to confession. And the people who don't go to confession are the ones who most need to go to confession. And often tell themselves they'll eventually get to confession some tomorrow that never comes. Just go, okay? Just go. You might not do it well, but anything that's worth doing is worth doing badly, right? Just give it a stab. And then make it a regular part of your life. Be reconciled to God by praying. Just so happens that this week I wrote a bulletin column on prayer. I wasn't even planning to preach on this. It's just divine providence, right? People say, "I don't have time to pray." Stop it. Stop making excuses. Find time. It matters. And people say, "You know, I don't go to Mass as often as I should. I do weddings, and you know, the bride and the groom come in. I say, 'How often do you go to church?' And very often they say, 'Not as often as I should.' And so I say to them, 'Well, how often should you go?' And the answer is, every week and every holy day of obligation. Order your life around it. Listen, be reconciled to God while you've still got breath in your body. And that's the easy part. The hard part is being reconciled with one another. Do you know the difference between forgiveness and reconciliation? Forgiveness is when you extend the hand in peace, right? You're going to bury the hatchet, you're going to start all over. Reconciliation was if somebody else takes that hand. Now, you can extend your hand in peace. You have no control over whether anybody else takes that hand. Don't let that stop you from trying. It might mean writing a handwritten note to somebody or giving them a phone call. It might mean a text message. Send a smoke signal if you have to, right? Don't worry about whether or not they're going to take your extended hand or slap it down in contempt. You do what you know you need to do. Can I tell you another little story? This is something I shouldn't say from the pulpit, all right? Now I've really got your attention, don't I? I knew a man who had a near-death experience, and maybe you've heard of these before, where somebody, clinically speaking, they're dead. They've got no vital signs, you know, no sign of life whatsoever, and they're out for 5 minutes, 10 minutes, 15 minutes, and then somehow they come back. Happened to this man. And when this happens to people, they usually report that they saw deceased loved ones while they were out. This man said that as he was coming back, he saw a deceased loved one and he cried out before he woke up again. He cried out, he says, "What are we supposed to be doing down here on this earth?" And the man replied back, "You're supposed to be forgiving. Be reconciled while you can. Because death is the great equalizer. Doesn't matter how much money you had, doesn't matter what your job was, doesn't matter what your title was, doesn't matter whether you were famous or infamous or incognito. Everybody's equal at that moment, aren't they? Princes and paupers, generals and janitors, PhDs and school dropouts, everybody stands side by side. And you want to know what else? We know what matters and what doesn't. There's a tombstone in Warwickshire, England, one of those old cemeteries. And some of those old cemeteries have little poems on the tombstone that tells you something about the life of the guy who's buried beneath. Saw this little tombstone and it said, "Here lies an old miser who lived for himself, cared nothing in life but for gathering pelf. Now where he is or how he fares, no one knows and no one cares." Be reconciled while you can. There's a sign back here in the sacristy. The priest sees it every time he goes to say Mass. And the sign reads, "O priest of God, offer this Mass as if it were your first Mass, as if it were your last Mass, as if it were your only Mass." And I've always thought that was good life advice. O child of God, live this hour as if it were your first hour, as if it were your last hour, as if it were your only hour. Because whether you like it or not, it's later than you think.